Right, we're back here, Channel 9 Live, as Mark Rusinovich comes down, because he's rushing down from his talk that he just gave. I'd like to point out a couple of things. I want to tell you a little bit about our schedule, and then I also want to tell you about some other cool stuff, and then maybe even do a demo if I have some time. All right, so the first thing I want you to take a look at is we have a subreddit for Microsoft Build. It's at reddit.com/r/Microsoft_build. Go take a look. I am watching it to answer any questions. Also, if you go to channel9.msdn.com, you'll be able to see this live stream. You're probably already watching it, so there is that. And then I want to tell you a little bit about the schedule that we have going on, and then we'll do a little demo. So coming up, Mark Rusinovich is, like I said, running down. We'll ask him about his talk and some of the stuff that he's done. Then we have a little bit about the Universal Windows platform. That's at 1:30. So stay tuned for that. And then we have someone coming, you might have heard of him, Eric Gamma from the Gang of Four. I'm seriously having a little fanboy moment on that. Is that okay? I'm gonna have a fanboy moment. Because the dude is like from the Gang of Four. So yeah, so if I start sweating and swooning, watch for that. It's gonna be fantastic. And then after that, some of my good friends talking about C# 6, VB14 and all things Roslyn. That'd be Mads Torgerson and Dustin Campbell. So stay tuned for that. We got a slate of really exciting stuff to watch. Make sure you stay tuned. So because he's running down, I thought I would spend a minute looking at Visual Studio Code. It's something that I was really excited about when they talked about it. I thought, you know what, why don't we try to download it and install it live and see how that goes. So if you go down here, you'll see we have, if you go to code.visualstudio.com, you'll see it's in there. It is obviously still in preview. The website is beautiful. I mean, look at this goodness. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna download code for Windows, and I'm just gonna hit run and hope for the best. So looks like it's pretty fast, running security scan. Here we go, everyone cross your fingers. Here we go, so Visual Studio Code is coming up. They're getting it started. You guys getting tingly? Visual Studio Code people, it's new. So as they get things set up, I just wanna say, it's pretty fantastic. I think as a company, Microsoft, we're excited for you to have choice and to build anything that you would like on any platform. So as this gets loading, just think about the possibilities of the kind of applications you can build, whether you're already on a Mac or on Linux. You can totally just use Visual Studio Code to set this up. All right, so looks like it's done. That took less time than I thought. I mean, when it goes for filler time, waiting for him, this was really, really fast. All right, so let's see. I haven't played with it. So let's see. You could make new files. You could take a look at the working files. You have folders. Let's try loading up something here. So I'm gonna go to my projects. Again, we're discovering this all together. And I'm gonna go to my Kitties website. I built the Kitties website. So let me just select this folder. Holy cow. There's my account controller. You can see it's all in there. There's my home controller. There's my manage controller. It's all pretty pretty cool. You can see here I'm loading stuff from Blob Storage. I mean, it's pretty exciting that to be able to just load this up. Notice I went from literally nothing to having Visual Studio Code and then installing it and running it. So if you want to see this website, it's a pretty cool one. I'm still moving to Redmond, and so my kid's got a new cat. And so I made, because you know everyone knows that the internet's for cats, right? And so if you go to kitties.azurewebsites.net, it's still loading up, it's warming up. You'll see this fabulous website that I built, and I can edit now using Visual Studio Code. So how cool is that? All right, so as you're also watching as that's spinning up, make sure you have your questions ready. Mark Rusinovich is gonna come, and some of the things that I saw him talk about, one was Azure Resource Manager. This is something I started looking at when I built this little demo application. It's pretty interesting how you can sort of group stuff together. And I'm gonna ask him more about that because I have some questions, if you have some questions about that as well. Also, it seems like he talked a little bit about resource providers and a way to script all of these things together. And so there's have some questions about that. And then VM scale sets and Azure Service Fabric. That seemed like an interesting thing. Azure Service Fabric seems like a way of being able to build a tons of microservices on top of stuff. So I'm going to ask a little about that. And then Orleans Actor Model. So again, if you have your questions, make sure you have them ready for him as he makes his way down. And then also on the subreddit here. All right. Let me tell you a little bit more about the schedule for tomorrow. We're pretty excited about that. We have Googs and another folk, some other people asking questions, or getting some questions asked by Mary Jo Foley. And then it looks like, this is pretty exciting, looks like we have a HoloLens session. Huh? That's pretty cool. That's tomorrow at 12:30, and then we're going to talk more about the Windows 10 platform. So, pretty exciting stuff, I think. All right, so I think my website is ready. You know what? We have some time. Let's do. He's coming over. Is he coming? All right, he's coming. He's coming down. So let me show you a little something about. I don't know if we'll have time to cover this. But I built a website. Let me do this demo here because we have some time. So I've been doing some explorations on the Logic apps for the new app service platform. And I want to show you something. So let me go here to my Server Explorer and let me delete some stuff here. So here I'm in Azure. And let me go to my storage. It's refreshing. And what I did is, and this is, again, just to get, because I want to know how this sort of all relates to what Mark was talking about and how to set these things up. But I have a, here's some data. So I'm going to go ahead and go to my kitties here and delete them. So I'm going to hit delete here. And I'm going to show you something fun. So I'm going to go ahead and load up my website again, and I'm going to refresh. And this I built literally like in 10 minutes, or no, it was like a day, you know, trying to figure stuff out. So notice that this is empty, and you can take a look at the kitties.azurewebsites.net if you want to. Don't take it down, people. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you something. So I'm going to go to my OneDrive account, and in my documents I have this. These kitties. So I'm going to go ahead and take a couple here, and not that one. And I am going to drop it over here into my kitties folder. So copy here. Oh, look, he's ready. So as it's going, you'll see it come up. So are you ready?
Ready.
Come on up, my friend. And then I'll show you how this is built, and then maybe you can tell us a little bit about how this sort of. So I'm not very good at DevOps.
Okay.
I'm a developer.
I can help you with that.
So help me.
Yeah.
So as a developer. What is DevOps?
What is DevOps?
Yes.
It is agile application deployment, management, update, lifecycle.
So it's kind of like all the stuff that the devs don't like doing?
Yeah, well, actually, traditionally, devs haven't liked doing it.
Yeah.
Because they traditionally have grown up in a world where developers develop. Uh-huh. They don't do much testing. Testers test. Customers deploy and uh-huh. operate. And service engineers oftentimes are fixing the bugs while the developers are off on to the next thing.
I see.
In this new world, the developers, and this is kind of born out of cloud service delivery and then agile delivery, because every company is becoming basically a service company when it comes to application delivery, is that developers are part of that whole end-to-end lifecycle of the application.
Yeah, it feels like the speed at which we need to put stuff out requires developers to also think about how am I going to deploy this and how am I going to manage this?
Yeah, exactly.
So there were some interesting things. I took some notes during your talk. It just happened like you just ran down.
I just
literally.
Ran.
I mean,
yeah.
Got to wipe yourself off. Right? But there was, no, I'm just kidding. You look great.
Okay.
There was a couple of things, and I was showing a demo of some app logic, app service that I built that uses logic apps and web apps and API apps. One of the things that I found is that there's a way to sort of group these things together, but it felt very cumbersome to do it in the portal. And I saw you doing some stuff at your talk to sort of manage that a little bit better. Tell us a little bit about that.
So what I was showing, so what one of my points was in this DevOps world where you're taking an application and you need reproducible deployments of the application. Mm-hmm. Most common scenario is I needed to deploy it to my test machine, my dev machine, mm-hmm. then I need to work on it there, and then when it's ready, I need to deploy it to production. Mm-hmm. In fact, there might be multiple productions that I'm deploying this thing to. There might be different sites that I'm deploying it to. There might be a failover site that I'm deploying it to. This might be an application which different customers are going to take and deploy themselves. And so I need, instead of having a kind of the traditional way that we've built applications in an IT world, in a developer world, is I kind of build my own glue to put everything together, and in the IT world especially, as I'm creating applications, I'm letting them accrete. So I start with something that's in place and I update some configuration
and then I go tweak it
some more and update it a little more, and you end up with a system that nobody understands and could reproduce.
Right.
What I showed you to helps address this kind of problem is what we call goal state seeking engines. Goal state seeking engines are tied with templates. So where a template describes what you want to see. And the couple places I showed templates in my talk this morning. One is an Azure Resource Manager. It's being able to describe it in a template exactly how you want your cloud application to look.
Okay.
And in the context of Azure Resource Manager, a cloud application consists of what we call resource types, resource instances of resource types, so like a database, a website, a virtual machine,
storage
account, SendGrid API, really whatever you want it to be. And by describing that in a parameterized template, and giving it to a goal state seeking engine, I get a couple things out of that. One is I get efficiency and I get maintainability. So I can look at the template and I understand what it's going to do.
Okay.
The app's going to look like this: a database connected to a website. You know, it launches some code into it. Here's a connection string parameter.
And it's just a text file, right?
It's a JSON file. Yeah.
That's awesome, because then if something does change, you can see what literally changed by going back in the history when you commit the stuff.
That's right. Yep. And I can take that template, that description, give it to the Azure Resource Manager, and the efficiency I get is, instead of me saying, okay, now I need to deploy the website. Oh, wait a minute. There's a connection string I need from the SQL database. Let me go add some code to deploy the SQL database. Let me read the connection string from it. Let me plumb that into the website. All things that I've traditionally had to do with my own glue, I just specify that in the template. Connection string comes out of database, goes into website. And so the Azure Resource Manager is basically the bus, the data bus.
That's really cool.
And the orchestrator.
It's kind of scary when you're deploying these things and then it feels very brittle, like, okay, let's tweak this, okay, let's tweak this, okay, now it works. Now you're tweaking a text file.
That's right.
And it will work the next time every time.
And not only that, I'm tweaking it. I can make modifications and I can give the template, updated template, to Azure Resource Manager, and it looks at it and goes, these things didn't change, these did. Let me just go change those things to make it look the way you want it to.
Well, we're going to take a 30-second break, or maybe 60 seconds, to get his computer hooked up. We'll be right back. So stay tuned, please. All right, we're back, and I just wanted to wrap this little dumb kitties example.
Yeah.
I made a logic app that sucked files from OneDrive and pushed it up to this app. So what you're telling me is that with this new resource manager, this application that I literally like clicked and typed and did all this stuff and hoped it worked, if I want to reproduce it, how would I go about doing that using the Azure Resource Manager?
Okay, so there's a couple things. One, you can definitely interact with your Azure Resource Manager like you're doing imperatively, so you can build up your resource group this way. One of the things you can do is suck out the concrete realization of that resource group.
Really?
As a JSON file, which is kind of like a built-in designer, and then what you've got to do at that point is parameterize it.
I see.
But at least it gives you the structure that you want. And
so
what
if
you
glued it together and it works, you can just suck out the JSON and then have
now,
that.
Now, if you deployed it again, it would deploy the exact same thing with all the exact same settings and storage accounts and everything else, which may or may not work.
Right.
Especially if you already have it running, right?
Right.
So you want to parameterize it, and that way you can then do the things that I was talking about.
Well, that's cool. So I wanted to move on to something else.
Yeah.
Because one of the cool things that I started looking at was Docker. So for those that don't know about Docker, what's the difference between Docker and like a regular VM?
So Docker is a couple things. It's a packaging format, a way to package up an application and deploy it. And these are what are called Docker images. And there's a Docker Hub, which is a registry where it's a public Docker Hub. You can create private ones. where you go put up these images. So like something like Ubuntu, Ubuntu, Canonical's there maintaining the master images for that. You use Docker client to go get one of these images, take your own, create your own images, and create a container. So it's also, it's packaging, it's image management, and it's also container instantiation, and also container management as well.
I see. And so what news did we talk about today that's exciting with Docker?
Well, so a couple things. The big news around Docker and containers, and I showed this in the keynote, was being able to deploy using the Docker client container to a Windows server.
That was actually really cool. I mean, the thing that's exciting to me is I've always thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, as you're the expert, that Docker was like a VM minus, right? They're lighter weight, and they just, how do they actually work?
So there's two aspects of the isolation that you're shooting for when you talk about this containerized world. One of them is environmental isolation. So the code that runs inside the container, you want to make sure that it works in your dev box and your production box.
Right.
If you deployed it into an empty VM, it would just work if it's the only thing in there, because nothing's going to collide with it. If it creates a file in a certain place, nothing else is going to create a file in that place. But if you put two copies of that thing in the same VM, they might collide on resources like this. So one aspect of the containerization is virtualization. So Linux has basically namespace virtualization built into it through LXC, as well as Union File System support, which is a kind of virtualized file system. So each container gets its own private view of the namespaces around process IDs, around file systems. When it writes a file to a certain place, it's only it can see it.
I see.
And some other container sitting next to it on the same VM writes a file to that place, well, it's getting its own private copy. They can't see each other. And then there's another aspect to it, which is often useful, is resource isolation. So I want to make sure that this container doesn't consume more than X percent of CPU, because then it'll interfere with the one next to it.
I see.
So I can, again, use things like C groups inside of Linux to control the resource utilization of that container.
So you don't have the problem of, well, it works on my machine.
Exactly.
And then you go somewhere else, and there's just a bunch of
you get a lot of predictability around this.
And so the cool stuff that I saw that you talked about is that now you can deploy directly to those containers from Visual Studio.
That's right. So we built in container support, Docker support into Visual Studio, with Docker client being able to point at a Docker host and then deploy the containers to it.
That's cool. Any other announcements around Docker?
Well, what I did show also was deploying to a Windows Server container, and I thought it'd be interesting to show you inside of a Windows Server container.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I've got here a Docker host. It's a local virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
There's the IP address of that Docker host. And if I did a Docker PS command, that shows us the containers in that host. And you can see that there are none there.
But now, where are these hosts living? Are they actually on Windows?
Yeah, this is a virtual machine that is launched on this laptop right here. We can't see the virtual machine. It's a headless virtual machine, but that's its IP address.
Okay.
And so there's a Docker engine, which is the Docker runtime, sitting in that virtual machine.
Okay, I got it.
And I've told Docker, by setting that Docker host, I've told the Docker command, by default, go talk to this host. So when I do the Docker PS, which is list me the containers, is talking to that virtual machine and saying, hey, any containers running there? And saying, no, I don't have any.
Okay.
Now what I want to do is launch a container in there, and I'm going to launch it. Here's this command, Docker run.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to name this container Windows. I'm going to make it interactive. I'm going to base the image off Windows Server Core. So it's going to start with that image. So the files that are part of Windows Server Core are going to be what's visible inside that container.
Got it.
And it's going to launch command as its command. And that's going to let me interact with it. So that combination of interaction with the command prompt. Now, in a second here, I'm going to have an interactive command prompt, which is actually running inside that container on that virtual machine.
That's really cool, because I mean, like, if it's this fast, for me, when I want to make sure that it will work on every machine, I usually had to stand up a VM, and that took forever because you stood it up, and then you had to install the OS. But now you just a couple commands, put stuff in there. Just for testing purposes, it seems like a really good idea.
It's fantastic for the dev test cycle because it's so fast and iterative, and you get a consistent starting point. So I'll demonstrate that by executing some commands in here, like system info. So this is showing me information about what's...
And this is in the container.
In the container.
In the container, okay.
Now what I can do help, but just to highlight the fact that this thing is fully isolated, I can delete the entire software.
You're doing scary stuff.
Yeah, don't do this at home.
Okay, scary stuff,
because you will
people.
Break your Windows
scary
system.
Scary stuff alert.
So I'm deleting the entire software branch of HQ Lookup Machine, which is part of the control center configuration for Windows. And we're going to see here in a second that almost nothing works.
I'm pretty sure.
So much depends on querying configuration out of there.
So if you're really in a destructive mood one day,
yeah,
then you just can spin up a Docker container and start wreaking havoc.
Exactly.
You're fine.
If you're mad at something, you know, it's like, I could delete all the files. You know, so system info doesn't work anymore. Help doesn't work anymore. In fact, the reg command doesn't even work anymore. The system is so broken. Now, but when I do exit, because I had a flag that said blow away that container when it exits, this is all gone. And if I ran that command again, I'd get a pristine system.
That's
based off
cool.
that same image. But what I want to show you is give you a little look about how this is built on top of Windows, because there's two things going on, right? There's virtualization of the namespaces, and then there's a virtual file system underneath. And so...
It looks like you already have one.
Docker... Docker PS-A. Docker...
Yeah, there it is.
RM... 08. And let's try that again.
You know, and the cool thing, like, it's not like we're moving files around. It's like, oh, you're trying to make a file that already exists. These are literally containers where you can run stuff in isolation.
Not sure what
yet. Right now you're loading up a new Docker instance, right? Container.
Yep.
And what happened is you try to make one that already had the same name.
Yeah,
you just totally removed it. Made a new one.
Yeah, that was a friendly, yeah, it's because it doesn't matter. And what I'm going to do is RDP into that container. And we'll take a look. I've got the sysinternals tools installed in there.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just not a...
ABC123, right? Is that a good...
It's pretty much,
yeah. Yeah, that's what we do at Microsoft.
And this Docker host command.
Looks like you're loading up the container.
Yep. And just to show you how compatible these containers on Windows are, Process Explorer, unmodified. And there it is. Now Process Explorer is seeing a view from inside the container. So these are system processes.
Right.
System processes that have been virtualized inside these containers. These are different than the actual ones on the outside. And now the problem is that I just lost my Docker host IP address. And so let me, because I'm going to connect to the host now and show you the view of that container from outside the container. 10.9.6.11.
You don't have IP addresses memorized, man? What's going on here? All right.
And so this is going to go in, again, this is going into that virtual machine now that container is running at. This also has the sysinternals tools installed. And we'll take a quick look at the container from the outside. And you're going to see two interesting things. On any normal Windows system today, you're only going to see one copy of something like the Service Control Manager. And there it is. But if we scroll down, so you scroll down to the bottom, you see this other part of the process tree here at the bottom, and there's another services. It's running in a different session. That is the virtualized services inside that container.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's got its own Service Control Manager in there. I can launch services. I can launch processes inside there. I can do interactive logons. That's what let me RDP into it. Here's a Win logon that's in there.
That's so cool.
Completely isolated. And now what's this thing is running on, this last demo here, just to show you, is I can modify the state of the container from the outside because I know how these things are implemented. Because there's a VHD underneath that container where all the writes are going, and then simply we just blow away that VHD when we blow away the container. And I'm going to give this thing a drive letter so we can interact with it.
And so now you're interacting with the virtual write space of the container by giving it a sort of a drive letter. Now you can just go into it and see what it's writing.
That's right. And I can do things like, so this D is its root of its Windows. There's its Windows directory. I know it's a little hard to see, but I can do echo hello test.txt, I'm writing into the container from the outside.
Uh-huh.
And if I go back now and look here inside the container, this is the container inside view.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be a file that magically appeared there from the outside.
Yeah, and he's not wearing long sleeves, so there's nothing up his sleeves when he did that. That's right. Well, let's take a question. We're about almost out of time, but I want to take a couple questions. Is there a Docker as a service on Azure or only Docker and VM?
So Docker as a service, I'm not sure what exactly it refers to. You can run Docker inside of Linux VMs on top of Azure. There's no built-in service that says, "Go deploy. Here's Docker containers, go deploy it." Now, what I did show in the session just a second ago is a Mesosphere cluster DCOS deploying on Azure, where you can go use that to deploy containers.
So what's a Mesosphere? Is that something I'm familiar with? Maybe other people are.
Yeah, so Mesosphere is it's a company that builds the Mesos cluster orchestration and management project that's an Apache open source project. And what that does is you give Mesos a bunch of clusters and you can register application frameworks with it, and then deploy applications to those application frameworks.
I see.
And then Mesos takes care of placing containers on different servers, doing resource allocation and...
I see. It's like the robot that puts stuff where it needs to go.
That's right.
All right, let's take another question. Would I be able to use Docker with Windows Server for applications like Microsoft Dynamics CRM? I would like to quickly move environments around with testing and DevOps tasks.
So Docker for Microsoft Dynamics CRM, we are working on figuring out what applications we can put in there. So we're still working through some of the application compatibility details for understanding the full surface area. One of our primary scenarios, of course, is ASP.NET 5.
Of course.
Another one is SQL as well. So you'll see some, we want to make it as, the support be as rich as possible. It's still a work in progress. But so the question is, it remains to be seen yet for exactly how compatible it is with these kinds of applications.
We had someone on earlier talking about Nano Server. Nano Server is different.
Was it Jeff? What's his name?
It was Jeffrey Snover. Yes.
Snover.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And it's a little bit different. Nano Server.
I always forget his name.
I know, right? The father of PowerShell.
Oh, that's the PowerShell
thing. Something like that, right?
Yeah.
So, Docker is different than Nano Server. How would you describe? I think I understand the difference, but how would you describe?
Yeah.
It?
Well, Nano Server is an operating system.
Full thing.
It's a stripped-down operating, so basically a minimalist operating system designed for cloud scenarios where you don't want user experiences on top, you don't want desktop services in there. It's basically just the components you need for running a cloud application. And that makes it ideal for this containerization world because you're bringing the application and the frameworks and the services with the container. So you deploy the containers on, and you want a very thin, lightweight OS underneath these things. So,
that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, next question from Stefan. How is application isolation and Service Fabric compares to Docker container isolation on Windows Server? Which brings us to Service Fabric. I wanted to ask you about that. What is that? And then maybe answer his question about how it's different to isolation with containers.
So Service Fabric, I think, is a microservice platform, and meaning a microservice application platform. So it lets you create applications that consist of microservices, and Service Fabric provides a whole bunch of functionality and capabilities that make it very easy to do that.
I see.
So beyond just deployment of the microservices to different servers, kind of cluster orchestration, it does health monitoring, it does rolling updates, it does partitioning, it does load balancing, it does has a name service built into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm
stuff.
Just not even it's half the kind of high-level capabilities I've just rattled through. There's a whole bunch more. And it also supports stateful microservices, which if you really want to be efficient in a cloud world, you don't want lots of round trips to some external store.
Right.
You want to keep the state with the compute. And there's a number of our kind of hyperscale cloud services built on top of Service Fabric because they need that efficiency. And Service Fabric takes care of the state management replication that's required to
build those. It sounds like it's a lot more than Docker containerization.
Yeah. Now, containers are a great way to package up microservices.
Right.
So one of the things that we don't have today in Service Fabric is support for Docker container, containerizing your microservice, but that's coming.
Okay. Yeah. Well, cool. Are we about out of time? We are about out of time.
Right.
Sorry to get to rush. This is some really cool stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Where can we look this up if we want to find out more?
Yeah, well, so there's a bunch of sessions at Build. Okay. So they're going to be recorded and be available right after. There's ones on Windows Server containers, ones on deep diving on Service Fabric, ones on Azure Resource Manager that we talked about.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for coming down and running after your session. We're going to take a little break until the next one. We'll see you next time.